Welcome back to the Deep Dive to the learner out there listening right now. We are so glad you're here today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We've got a really fascinating one lined up for you today.
We really do. So I want you to imagine stepping into the cockpit of this massive modern airplane. You're instantly surrounded by like this huge array of dials, switches, these glowing screens.
Right. It's totally overwhelming.
Exactly. It's a highly complex, incredibly precise dashboard, and it's designed to give the pilot complete control over the machine. But imagine if the pilot just, you know, sat back, closed their eyes, took their hands off the yoke, and just kind of hoped the plane would magically fly itself through a storm.
I mean, you'd end up in a nosedive. It's a complete abdication of responsibility. You're supposed to be operating the machinery.
Right. But the crazy thing is, when it comes to our own minds, our own internal emotional states, that is exactly what most of us are doing every single day.
Oh, absolutely. We're flying on this broken autopilot.
Yeah, just letting the turbulence, so like a Tuesday morning commute or a really stressful inbox, toss us around.
Yeah.
But today's source material is this fascinating set of personal notes from April 25, 2026. They're just labeled DM Call 5.
Yeah, DM Call 5. And it's basically a tactical manual for ripping out that autopilot.
Yes. These aren't just vague philosophical ideas. The mission of this deep dive is to unpack how these notes act as instructions for building an internal dashboard, so you can become a conscious creator of your reality.
Which is such a powerful phrase, conscious creator.
Right. We're going to get into how to manage personal energy, close the gap between thought and feeling, and actually apply this stuff in, you know, loud, chaotic environments.
So to set the foundation here, we have to look at the core premise these notes operate on, because they firmly establish that thoughts and feelings, they don't just color our perception.
What do they do instead?
Well, they serve as an operational mechanism. They directly impact reality. The source suggests that by taking deliberate control of these internal dials, you literally dictate your outer world.
Okay, let's unpack this, because that sounds, I don't know, a bit mystical at first.
It can, yeah.
So the first major dial on this dashboard is understanding the distinction between what the author calls cosmic energy versus physical energy. How do we define that cosmic energy dial practically?
Right. So it helps to translate cosmic energy into terms like directed attention or cognitive bandwidth or even just your core consciousness.
Okay. So bandwidth. Got it.
Yeah. And the source makes this critical distinction. Your physical body operates on physical energy, which is finite. I mean, it burns calories, it gets tired, it needs sleep.
By logical rules.
Exactly. But your cosmic energy, your intentional focus, it does not follow those same biological rules of fatigue. The notes argue your mind and spirit can remain fully engaged even when your physical body is just utterly exhausted.
Wow. That completely flips how we normally handle exhaustion. I mean, usually the second my physical body gets tired, my focus just tanks right along with it.
Right. They feel totally tethered together.
Yeah, they really do.
And decoupling them is the very first step. You can be physically drained from, say, a really long shift at work, but mentally, you can be in a state of high-frequency creation.
That's wild.
The notes place a huge emphasis on getting your thinking and feeling in sync, totally independent of that physical fatigue.
But that requirement, getting thinking and feeling in sync, that feels like the biggest roadblock in this whole manual.
Oh, for sure. It's not easy.
I like to think of the mind like a car engine.
Yeah.
Your thoughts are the steering wheel, right? They decide the logical direction you want to go.
Right, the destination.
Yeah. But your feelings, those deep-seated emotions, they act as the gas pedal.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right. So if you're steering toward a goal, like, say, a productive work day, but your feelings are entirely in reverse because you're anxious or just physically wiped out, you go nowhere. You just burn rubber.
You're just spinning your wheels.
Exactly. So how does the source suggest we actually bridge that gap? Especially when the outer world is throwing, like, a massive wrench in the engine.
Well, the mechanism to bridge that gap relies on this really bold claim in the text. It says the outer world follows the inner.
The outer world follows the inner.
Yes. The way you align that steering wheel and the gas pedal is by recognizing that everything generated by your mind in response to an event is purely an interpretation.
Okay, an interpretation, not a fact.
Right. Because we tend to treat our initial knee-jerk thoughts as absolute truths. Like if someone cuts us off in traffic, the thought, they disrespected me, feels like a hard, objective fact.
So the practice is intercepting that assumption. Like we aren't required to believe the initial thought our brain throws at us.
Precisely. If a thought puts your car in reverse, you literally have the authority to remove it.
Huh.
You aren't changing the outer world. I mean, the car still cut you off, but
right.
you are consciously creating the moment by choosing a different interpretation. You refuse to let the external event dictate your internal dashboard.
That makes total sense. Which actually sets up one of the most, I think, relatable concepts in these notes, the spin out.
Ah, yes, the spin out. We've all been there.
We all know that sensation. It's like 2.00 p.m., you get this vague, slightly passive-aggressive email from your boss, and suddenly your mental state just plummets.
You start catastrophizing immediately.
Yes. Your stomach drops and you spin out. Now, the author of these notes sets a highly specific goal for this exact scenario, which is reducing the latency of a low state.
Right. And latency here means the delay between the moment that negative trigger occurs, like reading that email, and the moment you consciously intervene to stop the spiral.
The neurochemical spiral,
okay.
Yeah. And the target they set is a 10-second latency.
10 seconds.
They want you to catch and reverse a spin out in 10 seconds. That is an incredibly tight window.
It is, but there is a biological and psychological reason for that speed.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you wait much longer, your amygdala basically hijacks your prefrontal cortex.
And then cortisol just floods your system.
Exactly. The notes describe these low emotions in a really specific, almost predatory way. They say they are vampiric.
Vampiric? Wow.
Yeah, low emotions suck your energy, but more importantly, they actually need your energy to survive.
Let's push that vampire metaphor a little further because I think it illustrates the mechanics perfectly.
Yeah.
If a low emotion is a vampire, every time you sit at your desk and rehearse an argument in your head,
or reread that passive-aggressive email.
Right. You are actively pumping blood to the vampire. You are keeping it alive.
That is exactly the mechanism. Frustration and anxiety, they require your cognitive bandwidth to sustain themselves.
They feed on it.
They do. Positive emotions, on the other hand, are generative. They act as a support system and create energy. So the tactical advice here is to literally starve the energy.
Starve the energy. Yeah. So you just literally cut off that neurochemical loop.
You stop that specific train of thought. You just cut off the food supply.
I understand the mechanics of starving a minor annoyance, like an email. But, you know, if we look at the realities of the human experience, is it really as simple as just choosing differently when you're hit with something genuinely devastating?
That's a very fair point.
I mean, a 10-second turnaround for a major life setback or profound grief feels, I don't know, almost dismissive, feels impossible.
And that is a vital distinction. What's fascinating here is that the author actually anticipates that exact friction. The text isn't promoting some glossy, toxic positivity.
Okay, good. Because that would be tough to swallow.
Right. The source explicitly notes that if an event is highly impactful, it naturally takes more energy and logically takes more time to process and reverse.
So the 10-second rule is just for the small stuff.
Exactly. It's a metric for daily friction, the bad traffic, the rude email. For heavier traumatic things, the text outlines a process of erosion.
Erosion, meaning like wearing it down over time rather than just snapping out of it instantly.
Yes. Step-by-step disempowerment. You might not cure deep anger or grief in 10 seconds, but in any given moment, you can choose not to actively feed the spiral.
So you might feel the weight of a major setback, but you choose not to catastrophize about what it means for 10 years from now.
You got it. You repeatedly make that micro choice day by day. And that continuous, deliberate choice gradually erodes the foundation of the low energy state. You're cutting off its food supply in small increments until the whole structure collapses.
That quiet internal erosion, it makes so much sense when you're alone with your thoughts. But life doesn't just happen in a vacuum.
No, it certainly doesn't.
How did this mental mechanism hold up when your physical body is under stress and you're surrounded by external chaos? The notes actually make a hard pivot here to address that exact question.
They do. They say you have to practice this in high energy, high friction environments.
And the laboratory they suggest for this is the gym.
The gym. It is the ultimate proving ground for this dashboard.
Because it tests both your physical and your cosmic energy simultaneously.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. It's loud. It's crowded. The music is abrasive. People are in your way. And on top of all that, you are actively depleting your physical energy reserves.
So if you can maintain your internal frequency there, you can maintain it anywhere.
That's the idea.
The tactics here rely on this checklist item the notes call a DCA, a daily conscious action.
A DCA.
Yeah. To make this concrete, a DCA is a personalized physical anchor. Like, it could be grabbing the handle of the gym door or tapping your water bottle right before a set.
Right, a specific physical trigger.
And that action triggers what the source calls a one-minute energy meditation. So you run through a specific mantra or lock in your intention while standing right in the middle of all that chaos.
You use that physical anchor to set the trajectory. You walk into the weight room, you tap your water bottle, and you visualize the equipment you need being available.
And here is the critical pivot point the notes emphasize. What if someone is using the machine you want?
Right. The natural reaction is to stand there glaring at them.
Exactly. But glaring at them is feeding the vampire.
Yes. You are taking your finite cosmic energy and just handing it over to irritation. Instead, the practice is to consciously move on to another exercise or simply pause.
And during that pause, your focus remains entirely on the specific muscle you are targeting, or maybe just the rhythm of your breathing.
You completely starve the narrative about the guy hogging the machine.
Right. You don't let him onto your dashboard. The notes talk about visualizing an internal energy fountain between sets.
I love that visual.
Me too. It actually reminds me of tuning an old school analog radio. When you use your DCA in the gym, it is like turning the dial to lock onto this crystal clear, high definition radio frequency.
And that frequency is your workout.
Yes. Your muscle contraction, your internal energy fountain, the guy dropping heavy dumbbells, the crowded locker room, that is all just static.
And you have to train yourself to ignore the static, because the natural human tendency is to tune our dial toward the loudest noise in the room.
Which is almost always an annoyance.
Exactly. This gym practice forces you to manually hold the dial on your chosen frequency despite the blaring static all around you.
Now, if you can master holding that dial steady in a chaotic gym, you are ready for the final and honestly the most difficult arena these notes tackle.
Interpersonal dynamics.
Yes. We are moving from environmental static to interpersonal static.
Right.
Because how do you apply this energy management when you're engaged in a conversation with another human being?
Other people are definitely the most unpredictable variables we face.
By far.
And the notes introduce this specific technique for these conversations. They give it this really cinematic title, The Stormbreaker.
The Stormbreaker. I love that. So what is it?
A Stormbreaker is a conversational tool. It's designed to intercept a discussion that is spiraling downward like complaining, gossip, mutual frustration, and actively pull it upward.
Okay, so mechanically, what does a Stormbreaker actually sound like? Like if a coworker walks up to my desk and just starts complaining about management, how do I execute this?
The source details a very deliberate sequence here.
Hmm.
First, you interrupt the downward momentum by asking the person for their advice on something, or you ask them to expand on a recent accomplishment.
Oh, that's clever. You're manually shifting the spotlight of their brain away from the grievance.
Exactly. You put the focus onto their own competence. Next, you ask them how they feel about it. You actively capture their emotional state.
Okay.
And finally, using your own intentional energy, you up-level the interaction.
Hold on, wait. I see a massive structural risk here.
What's that?
If I intentionally ask a coworker who's already in a bad mood how they feel, aren't I just opening the floodgates? Like, aren't I inviting them to dump all their low energy right onto my dashboard and drag me into their spin out?
That risk is exactly why this requires conscious creation.
Mm.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, go back to the foundational principle. Low emotions need your energy to survive.
Right. The vampires.
Yes. When a coworker is venting, their low state is subconsciously seeking your validation. They want you to agree, to get outraged with them, to feed their vampire with your cosmic energy.
Oh, I see. So if I reply, yeah, the new policy is a total disaster, leadership has no idea what they're doing, I've just handed over my energy.
Exactly. You've tuned your radio to their static. But wielding the Stormbreaker means validating their human experience without validating the despair.
You don't feed the negative loop.
Right. You hold your ground in your own positive, generative state.
Okay, so what does that actually sound like in practice?
It sounds like acknowledging the friction, but then pivoting the frequency. So they say, this new policy is a disaster. You listen and you say, I hear you. The rollout has been incredibly frustrating and it's putting a lot on your plate. But knowing how you handled the last transition, what's one piece of this we can actually control right now?
Wow. You become the anchor.
You do. You acknowledge the heavy weather, but you refuse to let it capsize your boat. And by doing so, you're offering them a lifeline to pull themselves up to your frequency.
You are actively managing the dial for both of you. That's incredibly powerful.
It really is.
When we step back and look at the entirety of DM Call 5, it presents this profound shift in how we operate. You know, you are the pilot, not the passenger.
Yes. Your inner world, your cosmic energy, your interpretations dictates your outer world.
You have an internal dashboard, and your primary goal is reducing that latency.
Yeah.
You want to catch the mental spinouts within 10 seconds before the plane dives.
And the mechanism to do that is ruthlessly starving the vampires.
Yes. You cut the neurochemical loop of low, draining emotions while consciously feeding the positive states that generate energy.
But you don't just test this in isolation. You take it into the friction of daily life.
Right. You use high-stimulus places like the gym as a literal laboratory. You lock in your daily conscious action. You practice your one-minute energy meditations amidst all the noise. And you wield your stormbreaker to elevate the people around you without getting pulled into their static.
The imperative here is application. I mean, the theory of cosmic energy is useless unless it is applied to the friction of a Tuesday afternoon. Your challenge as the listener is to examine your own routines. Where is your physical anchor going to be? What is the specific moment today where you will set your DCA and practice consciously sinking your thoughts and feelings, regardless of physical exhaustion?
It is entirely about the reps.
Yeah.
But before we finish, there's one final lingering implication of these notes that we need to consider.
Okay, what is it?
Well, we spent a lot of time on the core premise that the outer world follows the inner.
Right.
If we take that literally, if your physical reality is truly a mirror reflecting your cosmic energy, think about the physical blockages you encounter.
Mm.
The next time you find yourself entirely stalled out, maybe a major project is frozen, or literally just someone stubbornly sitting on the exact gym machine you need right now, what does that external obstacle try to tell you?
Oh, that's interesting.
Could that physical blockage actually be a dashboard warning light alerting you to an unaddressed low-energy spin-out currently happening in your own mind? It is definitely worth checking your gauges.
That is an essential question to carry with you as you navigate the static today.
Absolutely. So until next time, keep your hands on the yoke.